Hey guys, I am Jeremiah, and you are listening to Christian Anarchy. In the never-ending battle against the state, one of the most important things for us to do is just to take some time and rest, relax, get in a good nap so you might be more equipped to fight against all the people that support violent aggression on you and other non-aggressive people. So one important aspect for us to be equipped is to remove everything from our mind and chill. Today, just sit back and listen to the smooth, calming, and dulcet tones of my voice. I don't even know what dulcet means, but hopefully it is a fitting word that's an accurate adjective to describe what's going on right now. But if it's not, making sense is not our major priority. Maybe as I continue on, I'll even add some ocean sounds or maybe some sweet nature jungle sounds that you might for a moment ignore the evil inherent in government's existence and focus on the good parts about this beautiful world of God's creation. That sounds like the type of show you can imagine me doing, doesn't it? It's always somebody else. Why did you die? Don't leave me. I hate you. Heidi Hope, welcome to the show. If you want to contact me, you can email me at jeremiahjm@gmail.com, and you can go to the website www.christianarchy.net, which you might find mildly useful, and it's a potentially good way to share this podcast with others, which I highly recommend you do. I think that might be one of the most personally rewarding things you could possibly do in your life, and I'm sure God will return it 100-fold back in your favor. That's a great little tactic, isn't it? To tell people to do things that benefit you and then claim that God will bless them for it. It's perfect. I should start a church. I feel like it could really get me ahead in this world. Anyway, today's episode is going to be the first in a two-part series about a justice system in a free society. And as I've been wont to do when it comes to proposing non-aggressive alternatives to services the state provides, I'll first explain some of the reasons why the present system isn't very good. A free society justice system will not be perfect, and I'm certain given the complexities of justice, it will be far from it. But it need not be perfect to be a viable replacement. It just needs to be better than what is. And I find it easier to show it's better than what is when I first address some of the practical and ethical problems with the justice system run by the government presently. When advocating for a large change, it does make sense to show a need for the change. There are two obvious injustices up front, which I've already discussed so much you may be sick of hearing about it. But the first injustice of the justice system is that it exists through taxation, which is a violent act of theft where people are forced to give up their money at gunpoint. Although, admittedly, there are many steps between the gun and the initial request for money, the gun is ultimately what provides the teeth of the tax. So the justice system is founded on theft. It's founded on injustice. So we begin with a pretty weak foundation for seeking justice. And then there are the laws I come back to periodically. The millions of laws that our modern justice system, it feels deceiving to even use the term justice system to describe it sometimes, but that what we would call our modern justice system determines whether people violated and then determines their punishment for violating these laws. There are so many laws, no one even knows how many federal laws there are. They can't keep count. In addition to the federal law, there are also numerous state, county, and city laws piled on top or underneath, I guess. Somewhat humorously, in light of this, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Just because you have to follow more laws than any normal human could possibly memorize does not excuse you if you break one of them. The notion that that's anything other than tyranny is a sick joke. And that's not even the point I wanted to make. The vast majority of these millions of laws are not really about protecting people and their property. Most of these millions of laws are written limitations on what people can do with their own body, property, and relationships. Most laws don't protect rights. They violate them. Would you like to buy or sell unpasteurized milk? You can't. Want to build a shed on your own land? Well, you got to get permission from your violent ruler first. Want to cut someone's hair without a license? Go ahead if you want to be locked in a cage, you dirty criminal. Would you like to refuse to accept U.S. dollars as currency due to their incessant decrease in value? To the gulag. Are you desperate and in pain and want to try to treat your cancer with cannabis oil? Well, go for it, but be ready to face heavy fines and for your children to be abducted by Child Protective Services. Want to keep what you earned? Not on their watch. Want to engage in a voluntary economic relationship with someone south of Arizona or north of Montana? Not without the state determining whether or not they think that's okay. Would you like a Syrian refugee to come live in your house? Nuh-uh, not going to happen. Do you have a desire to feed the homeless without a food license? Well, do you want to go to prison because you have no respect for the law? I think you get the point. The vast majority of laws are violations of rights. They are widely accepted as fine because the legitimacy of government and whatever they say is widely accepted as fine. But we can tell whether or not a law is legitimate to enforce by imagining how people would react if I was doing something similar to you. What if I saw you on the street eating sugar-laden ice cream? Well, sugar results in all sorts of negative health effects, and there's really nothing good about it for you. So for your own good, for the good of society, in order to decrease overall healthcare costs and set an example for the children, I take the ice cream from you and charge you a $100 fine. Would it be legitimate for me to do that? No, because I have no right to determine what you put into your own body and no right to take from you your voluntarily acquired property. Even if I wrote a law which allowed me to do that, even if I had it signed by 100 people, it would be completely illegitimate for me to force you to obey my will like that. In fact, the only rightful, the only legitimate laws would be about protecting your body and your property. Laws which prevent me from taking the ice cream and charging you with a fine. If government laws were legitimate, then most of them would actually prevent the government from enforcing the rest of its laws. But they don't really care whether the enforcement of a law is ethical or unethical. So when we use the example I constantly refer to because it's such a ubiquitous injustice in the U.S. justice system, drug laws, we should see the enforcement of these laws as equally legitimate as me stealing your ice cream and charging you a fine, which will result in your imprisonment if you don't pay. The only legitimate laws would be those which prevent the lawmakers, enforcers, and judges from punishing those who buy, sell, distribute, or use drugs. With illegitimate laws like these, the real criminals are those who violate the rights of the lawbreakers. So the second obvious problem with the justice system, the system which makes the laws and determines whether a law has been broken and determines the punishment for breaking it, is that many laws are completely unjust, and so enforcing them and punishing people for violating them is itself an act of injustice. Evil laws make justice systems evil institutions. But what about the times when the justice system does what it's supposed to? What's wrong with that? How could it, when it functions in the way most people think it does and everyone thinks it should, be immoral? So let us suppose someone does something we would all agree is unlawful and an unallowable crime against humanity. Murder is the easiest. Let's suppose someone is walking past you in the street, doesn't like your face, and kills you. You are murdered in full view of a security camera. The murderer is tried, convicted, and sent to a lifetime in prison. Isn't that the justice system doing what it is supposed to do? Didn't the justice system perform a legitimate function and do something just and good? My answer is yes and no. I think it's good the murderer faced some sort of consequences. Society can become pretty dangerous pretty fast if people can just go around murdering other people without repercussions. Not that most people would, but even if just a small minority could, it wouldn't go very well for everyone else. And given the nature of this particular murder, where the murderer killed you because they didn't like your face, it's also good that this person was removed from society. They are obviously unstable and are a danger to everyone else. They should, in some way, be removed or constantly watched or otherwise prevented from hurting another person in the future. Moving them into a prison is one way of doing that. So, great job, state-run criminal justice system. You did it. You successfully did something good in a hypothetical scenario thought up by an anarchist. Chalk that one up as a win. This isn't over yet, though. One problem with the modern justice system is the focus on punishing the perpetrator. I don't have much of a problem with punishing murderers and thieves and defrauders and those who otherwise violate the rights of others. I definitely want to give them grace and have them be transformed into the image of Jesus, but if they don't want to face punishment, then they shouldn't violate the rights of others in the first place. The present justice system probably focuses too much on punishing the perpetrator rather than restoring the victim, and I prefer to be victim rather than perp-focused. So when you were murdered, a great injustice was done. Yes, to you, but also to your family. A justice system which only punishes the perpetrator does nothing to make the victim whole. While your family may feel some sense of closure and relief when the murderer is locked up for life, they have still lost you, and they have nothing to show for it. A just justice system will focus more on making the victim whole than punishing the aggressor. When the focus is on attempting to bring some sort of restitution to those who have been victimized, the system will seek ways the criminal can pay for his crime, not pay by being punished or removed, at least not that alone, but pay by actually giving to the victims they wronged. So I would argue even when the criminal is imprisoned, one way the modern system lacks is by not providing any sort of real substantive restorative justice to the victim. And because the system is funded through taxation, you know who has to pay for the murderers to live? Everyone does. Everyone is forced, ironically under the threat of being murdered themselves, to pay for a murderer to have food, water, shelter, TV, recreation, showers. It actually costs more to pay for a person to be in prison for a year in the U.S. than many people make in a year. Lots of people in poverty are worse off than people in prison. It's a very expensive system to run, and the whole society is forced to essentially give money and resources to murderers. While it's bad that everyone is forced to pay for the basic necessities of murderers, this isn't the biggest tragedy related to it. The biggest tragedy is that the victims and the families of the victims have to pay for the survival of the perpetrators. when a murderer goes to prison, the family of the victims who pay taxes must pay for the well-being of the person that murdered their brother, sister, father, whoever, or else they will be imprisoned or murdered themselves. Those who are victimized are punished by the state for their victimization when a murderer is sent to prison. Personally, I think a civilized and wealthy society, when dealing with criminals, even violent ones, should find a way to remove them without killing them and ways to punish them without physical violence. Obviously, though, no one, especially not the victims, should be forced to pay for their survival. Even though ideally, some may think, myself included in most scenarios, the victim who follows Jesus should forgive the perpetrator and help them out in a heaping coals kind of love, when the victim is forced to do this, it's no longer forgiveness or love. And worse, when the victim is forced to pay for the survival and the entertainment even of the person who wronged them, they are being further victimized by the perpetrator. And even when murderers get sent to prison, prisons don't do a very good job reforming prisoners. The recidivism rates, where people go to prison and get out and commit a crime and end up back in prison, are really high. In many studies done from the 1980s to the 2000s, over 60% of criminals who left prison were back in prison within 3 years. While if they violated the rights of others and are a danger to society, I'm all for removing them. But if the plan is to remove them temporarily, a major goal should be to reform them before they get back out. After all, the point of removing them is to prevent them from harming others in the future. If preventing them from hurting people in the future is the goal, then helping them become the type of person who doesn't violate the rights of others is an important part of that, and the present system sucks at it. Now, don't hear me saying that reforming violent criminals is some super easy thing to do. It's definitely not. However, as with everything, because of the incentive structure, market-driven reformation would find more efficient and effective ways to provide the most amount of reformation at the lowest cost. Some studies have suggested prisons are actually worse than simply doing a poor job of changing inmates for the better. Some studies suggest that many people become worse criminals who commit worse crimes while they are in prison. The time spent in prison may, for some individuals, shape them into the type of people who commit more crimes and more dangerous crimes, not less. It is possible prisons have an overall increase in recidivism rates compared to no prison. I'm not even going to touch on the violence problems in prisons, including a lot of rape. Not because they're not important, they are. Just makes me feel a little sick right now, so I don't really want to discuss it. I had Taco Bell yesterday too, which may explain the sense of sickness. But still, I'm just going to give it a mention. The justice system we have now is also really inefficient. There is the idea many have that the common practice is to get a fair and speedy trial in front of a jury of your peers, which is the theory behind our justice system. It's how it functions in an ideal world that is completely different than reality. The truth is that cases like these are rare. It's rare for a trial to be speedy and for a trial by jury to be a reasonable amount of time after whenever the incident occurred. More than this, it's even rare for cases to go to trial. Less than 10% of all cases even do. Many cases, probably most cases, are settled in some pretty unsettling ways. There are settlements made through threats of harsher sentences. Settlements made through threats of harsher sentences are common. They may be threatened with a 15-year sentence, but graciously provided the opportunity to settle for a 2-year sentence. And there are many stories of people who felt like they couldn't go to trial because they might be convicted of a harsher crime they didn't even commit. Some people have stories where they claim to be innocent of the original crime they were convicted of, but they felt bullied into settling for a small punishment because they were so afraid of a greater one. I don't know if these stories are true and they are innocent, of course, but I'm just inclined to believe anything negative about the state. Added on to all this, we have the sick corporate collusion with the government when it comes to government-funded and privately run prisons. I'm not sure. It could be that big business colluding with government is actually worse than just government itself. It's probably not true, I guess. It seems to be at least as bad, though. What we have with the prison system is some really screwed up contracts made between the owners of the private prisons and the county, state, and federal governments. Private companies build prisons, which they then charge the government to use. Some people call this a private prison system, seeking to imply that it's some sort of free market thing, but it's really not. Don't let them fool you. It's government action with participants who are outside of government, but it's all directed, regulated, and ultimately funded by the state. And this relationship between the state and the privately owned prisons has some twisted incentives. There are the obvious incentives of any close relationship between the state and large businesses, the sort of I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine stuff. I'll give you campaign dollars if you choose to use my prison instead of someone else's. I'll offer you a position in my company when you're done with your political career if you support this bill, which will ensure the state does business with my company. It's politicians doing their thing, using the rights and resources of the populace to maintain their position and better their own future. This isn't really anything surprising or unique, I suppose, just business as usual for the ruling class. But also, these contracts include further perverse terms that create more injustice. For example, they may make a contract with a prison which obligates the government to keep the prison 95% full. And if they don't have it 95% full of inmates, they still have to pay as if the prison is 95% full. So they might as well keep it full. Not only this, but often the funding for these prisons are multi-tiered and based upon the number of prisoners. So the local government might be subsidized by the county, county by the state, and state by the feds. And these subsidies will usually not be based on the contracts with the prisons, but based upon the number of prisoners in the prisons. Local governments will want to make sure they have enough lawbreakers in their area to keep the prisons full, so they keep their subsidies coming. And then there's the relationship of the politicians with the citizenry. What you don't want to tell taxpayers is, hey, by the way, we have a bunch of half-empty prisons lying around, but we are paying the companies who run the prisons as if they are 95% full. It makes the people who contracted originally look stupid. And it looks like the government is just wasting money and not doing anything productive with it. So instead, they double down on their idiocy and evil. Not only are they wasting money on the prisons, but they make sure there are enough lawbreakers out there to fill the prisons to capacity. This way, they can tell the populace, hey, look how awesome we are. We are keeping the dangerous scum off the streets. Full prisons are a great tool to convince the people just how good and necessary the state is. So the way these deals are made incentivizes the state to create criminals where once there were none, and to imprison people they would perhaps not have imprisoned otherwise. The state is incentivized to increase the number of laws, which send people to prison, and increase the lengths of prison stays for the laws which already exist. because the government has a coercive monopoly and thus no competition for the services it provides. It cannot be held accountable. There are many injustices built into the justice system, and the incentive structure encourages even more injustices to happen within the justice system. In a free society, I suspect the two main goals of the justice system will be to restore the victim and to protect everyone in the future. The modern justice system has the removal of the criminal from society as the first priority to prevent them from breaking more laws. But this is because it's funded and run by the state. Even with the incentives of the government justice system at the most pure, it's really about the well-being of the collective. But victims are not a collective. They are real individuals who have been wronged, and those wrongs should be set right. Removing the person who wronged them doesn't do anything to rectify their circumstances. The victim doesn't gain simply because the perpetrator lost. Punishment might be what the perp deserves, but the victim deserves something completely different, and the victim is the one we should be more focused on as the one who has been wronged. I think the market desires of the customers of the justice system, the victims, will lead to a focus on their compensation for their losses. If the perpetrator has to pay for restoring their victim or work to repay them over time for the wrongs they committed, this itself would act as a future deterrent because the effort it takes to restore the victim is a punishment in and of itself. One other thing I wonder about but have literally no evidence for, although I think I perhaps have somewhat of a biblical basis that I'll discuss next week. But one thing I wonder is if a focus on restoring the victim is the best thing for the perpetrator as well. I wonder if the best way, or one of the best ways, to reform the person who violated the rights of someone else would be for them to have to participate in the process of setting things right, of making up for their wrongs. I wonder if by restoring the victim, they might better realize the damage and pain they caused, and so not want to engage in it in the future. Maybe they also feel like they've made up for what they've done, and having paid what they owed, feel like they are now back to zero and can re-engage in civilized community. I suspect with a restitution system prioritized over a punishment system, society will be more likely and more willing to interact with someone who made their victim whole than they would be with someone who was simply punished for the victim they created. Perhaps the act of the perp trying to set things right will be restorative, not just to make the victim whole, but will have a restorative effect on the relationships between the victim and the victimizer, and the victimizer and the rest of society who sees that the victimizer is willing to work to make up for the mistakes they made in the past. Again, I have no evidence for this position, just guesses based on a lot of personal analysis of conversations with people who have been in situations like these as criminals. I'll be talking more about stuff somewhat like this next week, and I will provide a more biblical basis for these ideas and talk about how such a system of justice might be integrated into society and funded. Thanks for listening, y'all. Enjoy what you're doing. Peace.